Welcome to episode 12 of Anthony Nolan's Patient Services Team podcast. I'm Claire and I am the Patient and Family Engagement Manager here at Anthony Nolan. Through this series of podcasts, we hope to provide you with different insights into the experiences of having a stem cell transplant. We'll be looking at what life is like before, during and after transplant, as well as talking with healthcare professionals for advice and guidance. We will also hear from patients and their families who will share their personal stories and experiences with you. We hope you find listening helpful, interesting and informative. Today I am joined by Ryan Harvey. Ryan was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia when he was 14 years old. A year later, Ryan relapsed and needed a stem cell transplant. Anthony Nolan found a matching donor for Ryan and he received his transplant at the Royal Marsden Hospital 6 years ago. Now, 22 years old, Ryan prides himself in being a public speaker and aspiring author, sharing what it was like for him to go through this experience at a young age. In this conversation, we're going to discuss Ryan's experience of coping with fear when going through cancer and a stem cell transplant. I am really looking forward to hearing his thoughts. Hello, Ryan. How are you doing today?
Hello. How are you? I'm really good. How are you?
I'm doing really, really well. It's good to see you.
It's really good to see you too. Well, finally, face to face, we've sort of done the classic COVID stuff of the e-meeting and not face to face quite just yet. So it's good to sort of meet you face to face.
Absolutely. And be in person. And thanks so much for being on the podcast. I'm really looking forward to hearing all about your experience and what you're up to now. Let's get straight into it. So, Ryan, you had a stem cell transplant for acute myeloid leukemia following a relapse when you were 15. Can you tell us what that experience was like for you?
Yeah, definitely. So, obviously, I was diagnosed originally when I was 14 and I relapsed a year afterwards, which is really unfortunate, and then had to have a transplant because that was sort of the next sort of route of where we go from here. And as a 15-year-old, I think, understandably, it was terrifying to start off with, sort of being thrown into this adult world of hospital appointments, you know, treatment, medical, etc. Everything you kind of think of in that sort of world of transplant and cancer and leukemia.
Yeah.
I was thrown into that from a 15-year-old when I mean hadn't even started my GCSEs yet. So, you know, it was quite a terrifying and scary experience, I think, for me. But I say it sounds really odd, but I always say actually it was possibly one of the best things that has happened to me.
Oh yeah.
In my lifetime. Yeah, because it got me to where I am today and it's made me into the person who I am today as well. And I mean, we'll go into a bit more in depth in the podcast, but it is very much something that has taught me a lot of the lessons which a lot of the time we sometimes don't learn till we're older and a lot further down the line. So I'm quite thankful for that. And I think I've almost matured quicker because of it, which I've, again, tried to pick the positives out of as I do as the kind of person I am and try and make it something that it is. So yeah, I'm oddly thankful, but it was a very terrifying part of my life.
Yeah, and that is, I'm hearing from you that, you know, kind of shapes who you are today. And I'm curious, you know, you were only 15 years old. You know, what was that like? Do you have, I know it was 6 years ago, so a little bit of time ago, but what was it really like, you know, being that age, being taken out of school? What was the experience like for you?
It was really difficult because, I mean, when I was 14, I was literally, when I was first diagnosed in September, and I'd just got into my GCSE year. And then it's like, right, you're not going to school for 6 months. So I lost 6 months of my beginning of the GCSEs.
Wow.
So I was going into the boring educational part side of things in my life. I was playing catch up for a lot of that time because I was having to catch up on stuff. And I mean, I got out of my first treatment, I got better and I caught up and I put this work in. And then I was slapped with this relapse and it was like, you've now got to stop again.
Yeah.
And I was kind of lucky some of my courses had finished, but there was still work that needed doing. And it was like everything was put on hold. As cancer does, it just puts everything else on hold. And you're like, you'll get on with it. Now, I was adamant I was going to finish my GCSEs, which I did my treatment.
Yeah,
I
got. Wow. Well, during treatment?
Yeah, I mean, I can't take all the credit because I opened up my biology paper and it was about stem cells. And
so
kind of drilled about that for the past sort of 8 months by the consultant. So I was like, well, I've got this nailed. And then my English paper was like, write a story in your life, something happened to you. So I was like, there's no way they can give me anything other than an A on this grade. So I just wrote about what happened.
What are the chances that is? Yeah, that's incredible.
Very, very chancy. But yeah, as a 15-year-old, obviously, being taken out of that world, put into an adult world, taken away from like my friends, I mean not taken away from them but taken out of that school environment and just living with adults full time, which was difficult, and children much younger than me, because I wasn't quite old enough to go to Teenage Cancer Trust. So I was still on a kind of a children's ward. I had the wingspan to go down to the Teenage Cancer Trust ward in the daytime, but not have a bed on that ward.
So, in between the two.
So I'd go down there, could like watch football with Sky Sports or catch up with people down there. But because I wasn't really staying there, I never really managed to grasp that those friendships down there. But it was, I suppose socially it was quite difficult as well for me, and sort of trying to sort of not be too adulty when my friends are there. And then, you know, when my mum's there, and obviously not be too sort of like pally in a way as well. You know, it's a conversation of your friends, you don't have your parents. And
of course,
I never really had that. And I was missing out on all sorts of things like house parties, you know, parties at school. Missed out my prom because that was my transplant date.
Oh, wow. So, your skill prom.
Yeah,
no
all
way.
Of the all of the milestones that you usually wait for. Yeah, they were just cut. And I suppose I got the better deal in the sense I got a second chance at life. But it was still very much, it was a bit of a sore topic at the time.
Of course, of course. And do you remember kind of the day of transplant and then going into isolation after that? Do you have quite vivid memories of what that was like? Because of course then you had to kind of be isolated to like a side room on the ward, and that would have been completely different from the previous, you know, just having chemotherapy.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it was a completely different experience to start off with as well, because the hospital I was treated at originally, now they don't do transplant. They didn't do transplants for my age.
Ah.
So I had to be put into a different hospital.
Right.
So I was actually treated in Southampton, which is closer to my hometown.
Ah, okay.
But, well, it's an hour and a half away, but it's as close as we could get.
Yeah.
And the original plan was for me to go to Bristol and have a transplant there.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, they couldn't fit me until September. So my consultant, who was a lovely, lovely woman who you never said no to, basically managed to push and get a transplant to be done at the Royal Marsden in Surrey.
Okay.
So up to London.
Yeah.
Which was very far away from home. And I actually got to that ward for the first time when my conditioning started. So it was sort of into the deep end of this ward where I knew no one.
Mm.
And in you go, let's just go straight in and get it done. I had 2 or 3 days on a ward, a 4-bay ward, and then moved into a private room where my conditioning continued.
Yeah.
And then obviously, the transplant day, doors shut, everything was locked, and it was like, right, well, here you are. And funnily enough, kind of annoyingly as well, a heat wave of 25 degrees hit that same day as well.
Stop.
And the sun was beaming down into the room, and I was like, this is nice.
Oh no, I can imagine that makes it even more challenging. Like, as you say, you're kind of being in different hospitals, and then here you are in the Royal Marsden, and you're told, right, transplant's going ahead, and then here's isolation, and then the heat of the room. You're like, this is heightening everything, like, to a different degree.
Yeah, it really was. And it was tough. You know, I can't say, it was really hard for me, because I know there's other people out there that will go through it, and it might be more difficult for them, etc. Mm. So I can't really come on here and be like, it's really hard for me. But at that time, that was quite difficult for me to see. And
of course.
Going off topic a bit, I had to kind of shut myself off at social media in a sense as well, because watching my friends that were going out to the beach, to parties, to prom, and it was like, this is very difficult for me to see. So I actually didn't go on my phone much during that time as well, because it was just sort of reminding myself of what I wasn't able to have, which, as we all know as human beings, when you can't have something, you just want it a little bit more.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it sounds like a healthy approach, you know, to take that of kind of, okay, this is my reality. I have to spend the next number of weeks in an isolation room. What I'm going to do to sort of manage my own, you know, sort of the desire to compare. I'm going to remove myself from social media. Mm. I'm going to like focus on getting better, that recovery period. And that sounds like a really healthy and valid approach to take during a difficult time. So when going through your treatment and the transplant, how did you manage the fear that can arise?
Fear was a really difficult thing for me at the time, because I've got better at managing it as I've gone on. But during the time when I was sort of going through that transplant, I think leading up to the transplant, it was kind of all guns blazing, full steam ahead, we're going to go straight into this. I didn't really have a time to stop and think. And a lot of the time, I know consultants will say this to patients as well, as I'm sure a lot of people that are listening will have had it said to them, is that you will often think about this when it's stopped, because you're sort of on that like treatment train of like, we need to just get through this, and you're going like, what, it's one thing after another. It's like a full-time job. It's like one thing after another, constant, like you got this to do, appointment today, appointment tomorrow, x-ray, etc., all these things. You don't really have time to stop and think about it. There's times when you're on your own and you start thinking about what ifs, which is very, very normal. And I think that's one thing that I allowed myself to do, was like every now and again have that stroppy day. And my parents were very good with that as well. They'd allow me to have that stroppy day. It's a funny story, actually, when I was really feeling down the dumps before my transplant, and my dad was coming to stay with me, and we very quickly caught on to the fact that hospital food was not going to work for me. So dad was like, I'll cook you food instead, because he's quite, you know, he's a good cook. But dad, if you're listening, I don't mean it.
That's a wise wise of you to say he's a great cook, so it keeps on coming.
Exactly, yeah. So he made me this very very well made BLT, pristine, you know, it's three bits of bread toasted. Mm. He spent about 40 minutes slaving away in the kitchen, and I was having a really grumpy day, and he comes in with it, brings it up to me, and I've got mucositis at the time, so obviously sore mouth.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of come off the back end of that. Couldn't really open my mouth properly. He comes in with a sandwich and presents it to me. He's like, there you are, you know, something to eat for you there. And I looked at him and went, well, how am I going to eat that?
Oh, no, yeah.
And he was just like, okay, don't shout at him. And he walked out and it was like, he'd be fine. But that's what my parents did. They allowed me to have that sort of grumpiness as well. Not to the point that it got out of hand, but to the point where they'd like, look, you just need to get some energy out here. And I think that's where that was fear bubbling up. I think that's what it was when I was getting grumpy and annoyed and frustrated.
Sure.
It was just fear of what was coming, bubbling up inside me and then coming out as something else, which I didn't intend it to come out as.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's so valid as well, to kind of think, I need the permission today to just feel my feelings and to be frustrated, or as you called it, stroppy, or, you know, you're experiencing mucositis, you're in an isolated room, you know, that's quite tough. You're only 15. That is just valid for you to be able to be like, this is how I'm feeling. This is my reality and I'm going to roll with it and not suppress it. That sounds like a good approach.
That's the thing. Yeah. I think it's just allowing yourself to have those feelings, and it's completely normal. And you've got to understand as well, the treatment that you go through as well has effects on, you know, the hormones and everything, which
of course
are essentially in control of your feelings.
Yeah.
And this treatment affects it. So you've got to understand that what you're going through is going to affect the emotions. It's going to affect how you're feeling. It's going to affect that fear.
Yeah.
You're going to have these underlying emotions you don't quite know are there, but you know they are. And especially being 15, you're not quite emotionally mature enough at that time to understand that's what it is. You know, now I would know what it is, but at that point I wasn't.
Yeah.
And it's just about allowing it to just take its course and in what sounds like a harsh way of doing it, but just allow that ball to go and just do what you've got to do and allow the emotions to come up.
Absolutely, absolutely. It sounds like, yeah, you really felt those feelings. And as you say, even just being 15, navigating that and thinking, right, okay, here's where I'm at, this is what I need, telling your parents, you know, when you're feeling frustrated and asking for support as well. Some patients can experience fear and anxiety at different stages of the journey, so before, during and after a transplant, and this can understandably impact their well-being. Has there been something that you have found really helpful to support your emotional health?
Yeah, I've got to say, one thing that has really helped sort of post everything is being talking. It's a big thing, and we talk about it a lot in the world, not just within the cancer world, but within the world as well, talking and opening up. And there's so much that can be said for just speaking to somebody or speaking to yourself. So one of the things that I never did ever when I was on treatment was tell anybody how I feel. I never did it.
No.
I was very much a closed book in the sense that my consultant would come in and be like, Ryan, how are you feeling today? And I'd always be like, yeah, I'm feeling good. And she's like, well, I know you're not feeling good because you don't look good, but how are you actually feeling? And it would take 3-4 attempts for me to actually open up.
You felt that reluctance, or
that reluctance,
you just wanted to say,
I really wanted to just shut
it
up and just be like, no, I'm fine, leave me alone, I'm going to get on with this.
Yeah.
And actually, it probably wasn't the right thing to do. And I had a lot more fear popping up, and things have happened post-transplant in terms of like my emotional health with fear and anger and stuff like that as well that's come out after transplant, because I've bottled it up and put it in a box at the back of my head.
Yeah.
I always say to people, after my transplant, I sort of put cancer into this little box and then shoved it to the back of my head. And I was like, let's not deal with that ever again. And I think another thing, sort of going into the word fear as well, like how do we use fear? How do we deal with fear?
Yeah.
Fear doesn't have to be a negative word.
No.
I always say this to people. It doesn't have to be something that we're scared of. Like every single word in the world is being given a connotation by us.
Yeah.
So fear doesn't have to be negative. You can see it in a positive light. So for me, like I try to see that fear of potential relapse or that fear of anything that could happen after transplant as actually a fuel. It's like this fear is here. It's not going to go away. It's understandable. It's here because of what I've been through. It's just experiences that are coming back up again. Let's use that because it's not going to go away. So, I mean, I say like use, this is my email tagline. I always say like use your fear as a fuel to do something positive with. In the post time with cancer, patient, family member, friend, etc., you've taught a valuable lesson that unfortunately life isn't something that continues forever, and we know that.
Yeah.
So actually using the fear and the understanding of that not being a real thing is actually a very positive lesson that not a lot of people get, but to use it and then go and do something amazing with it. And you see these people that unlock, cancer patients for example, they have this zest for life, that when they get their head over the fact that this fear is normal and these emotions, normal post-cancer, and they start to use them positively, you see them doing these amazing things. And I can't tell you how many friends I know that have done fantastic things. You know, Brad, you've had on the podcast before, he's used his experience as well to do amazing things. And he sort of realised, I can't do anything with these emotions other than try and do something positive. So I'm going to use them positively as well. So actually, I think cancer sucks, but it's a pretty cool thing as well, because you can use it really well. And if you start to understand it and learn from it, you can, the world's your oyster, without sounding too corny.
No, it's not corny at all. I think, you know, Ryan, after what you've gone through, for you to be able to sit here and be like, yep, I had fear of relapse. Yep, I had fear of reoccurrence, fear of what my life was going to look like. But I've actually used that, you know, as fuel to kind of inspire me and think about what my life's going to be like moving forward. Like, that's really inspirational. And I'm sure if anyone's listening to this and they feel that, you know, understandable, as we've both agreed, you know, it's understandable to feel the fear and feel anxious and wonder what's happening and what's going on. But to sort of check in with yourself and see, yeah, talk to someone, speak about it, you know, use your resources, whatever that looks like for you, you know,
I still get the feelings now. Like, I mean, a lot of people, I think sometimes they think, you know, once you're over it, it goes. And that's it done. You don't worry about it anymore. The fear's gone. I still get it. I just 6 years down the line, I still have nightmares about it. And I still get fear of, like, I have like one mini night sweat. And I'm like, oh my God, like, what's wrong?
There it is.
That's it. And it's there, and it will be there, and it's going to be there. And it's almost a bit like a bit of tough love for myself, and me going, look, this isn't going to go away. You need to deal with this. And I get so many people that get in touch with me on my social media and stuff, and they'll be like, how do I deal with this? And I'm like, there's nothing I can do or tell you to do that will make it go away.
Yeah.
Because it will stay. And that really pains me to say that. But what you need to do is understand it's completely normal.
Yeah.
And just start to allow it to, if it's happening, it's happening, and it sucks. There's things we can do, there's mindfulness, etc., like meditation, stuff we can do around it which can help, but allow it to happen and actually wake up in the morning. I wake up in the morning from a nightmare of it, and I'll be like, okay, that sucked, I had a nightmare about it last night, but you know what, it's just reminding me that this isn't forever. Let's just keep doing what we've got to do, and let's try and do something amazing today with it as well. Every day's a new day. Let's go and grab something and do something. Carpe diem, as everyone else says.
I think that's incredible, Ryan, because it kind of, it lets you validate the feeling. It lets you be like, this is real. This is based on like an experience I've been through, which is very difficult. And I think it's nice to hear that you kind of use that as like a message to yourself. What do I want to do with this? What, how can I really tap into this emotion and use it for a message for how my day is going to look like now? And I hear that as well. A lot of patients say that, you know, they might have a rash, or they might feel sweaty and in the middle of the night, and they'll have that thought. They will think, ah, is this a relapse? Is this a symptom of something I should be concerned about? And it's also being really gentle with yourself, I think, is what you were saying there around, just think about it and also ask for support if you're concerned.
Exactly. Yeah, just reach out to people, think about it logically. Our brains aren't logical all the time, so the first thing is like the worst thing in our head. And I think that comes with being in the cancer world, of having constant bad news delivered to you.
Sure.
That you're sort of used to it.
Yeah.
And the first time something happens, you're like, okay, I'm expecting bad news, which is quite sad, but that's just
You go to that place
straight away, yeah. And I actually learned a technique, which the best thing to do to stop overthinking is to look at something, stop your eyes moving and breathe in deeply, and just look at something that doesn't move, relax. And I do this now. I look at a point in the wall, breathe in, hold it for four, breathe out before the classic stuff we've got taught when going through treatment, and it stops you overthinking. And it's because I think your eyes have to move around when you're overthinking anyway, because it's your brain obviously processing things. So if you stop your eyes from moving, it slows everything else down around it as well. So there's a little tip you could maybe use as well if you're listening.
Absolutely. I'm sure people will find that very helpful, and I kind of like that. Behind that is also tapping into your body. You know, your body is kind of processing what's going on in your mind, and it allows for that connection between the mind and the body, and sort of that breath work can be really helpful. So you're very passionate about sharing your story, which is incredible, to raise awareness of your experience and what it's been like. How would you say you're doing now and today, and what are you up to?
I'm doing so much better than I was 3 years ago. And obviously my partner sat on the other side of the screen, she would tell you 3 years ago that I wouldn't have ever spoken about this in this sort of setting like this.
Oh, yeah?
And it was actually not to the coronavirus I started speaking about it and opening up about it. And it's like the biggest weight taken off my shoulder. And it just made me go, I want to do it more and more and more and more, because it's made me feel good, but it's also helping other people as well, which I've always enjoyed doing, is helping other people. So I'm doing really good. And that's where that sort of, you know, that understanding my past and that understanding it's not necessarily a negative thing, it can be a positive thing as well. I'm using that more and more, and messages I'm trying to deliver. In one form of that is a book. I'm writing a book at the moment as well. So yeah,
incredible. Congratulations on starting that. Wow.
It's a lot harder than I thought. You know what? I was speaking to a friend about this yesterday, and he was saying, how's it going? How's your book going? And I'll say, you know what? It's harder than it looks. And I'm someone who can talk about myself quite well, and I know that. But writing my own life down And what's happened to me is a different ball. It's very hard. Mm-hmm. And there's been a few times where I've been like, I don't know what to write. Like, this is boring. Like, actually, nobody wants to hear about this. And it's been quite a difficult task, but it's been quite a cathartic task as well. And it's really helped me in understanding my story and sort of tapping into what happened. So it's my whole journey, basically, from the first time I was diagnosed until the end of my transplant. So if anybody wants to, when it comes out, then you can read my whole journey in depth from my point of view. And there's fear and stuff tackled in there as well, and different messages from cancer. It's like little bits of worry or post-cancer life, etc. Because obviously, don't forget, I had a year out in remission. So I sort of had that out you go and you come back in again. And I've had that sort of time as well. So it's sort of discussing everything and the emotions came with all of that, and being a teenager as well, because you've got to chuck that. Obviously came at the best time with my supposedly the most difficult point of your life anyway, being a teenager, and let's just throw cancer into the mix as well. So true. Yeah, it's been good writing it, but yeah, it's been a bit of a difficult but cathartic book to write as well.
Good. Well, you should be so proud, because I'm sure, like, if you look back at your 15-year-old self, there's no way in 6 years I'll be writing a book about this. Because as you described, you know, at one point you felt, right, let's close this down. Let's put this to the back of my head. You know, you described it as putting it in a box, back of the head, we're done there. But actually then you've noticed that shift in yourself around, I'm actually feeling well, I'm feeling well enough to write a book. Let's do that and see what that's like, you know. And it sounds like it's been quite cathartic. And
it's definitely helped me a lot. And I think one thing my mum said to me is that I started doing this more when I got to my 5 years post-transplant. And I think subconsciously that safety net sort of came. And I was like, I feel comfortable doing this now. I don't want to jinx anything.
Once you kind of hit that 5 years.
I feel comfortable doing this now, yeah.
Yeah.
Which has helped me a lot. But yeah, like you say, when I got out of my treatment originally, it was like, cancer isn't anything to do with me. We're going to close it off. But I say to everybody now, cancer isn't like a year-changing event, it's a life-changing event. Yeah. And if you don't let it do that, it's going to get very, very difficult for you. So you need to allow it to change your life, but you're in control of how it changes your life, and you direct it in what it's going to do.
Yeah, I like that message that, you know, you can kind of have a choice in that, you know, how you want it to impact you, what you want to your future to look like, how you can look after yourself as well. Those are really powerful messages. What advice then would you give to other patients who are going through a stem cell transplant and maybe feeling different feelings, so such as fear or anxiety, or just having a really difficult time?
I'd say, look, the one thing that helped me was distraction to start off with. Mm. Because, like, we've all heard from the consultant, like I said earlier, you'll deal with it afterwards. So going through it, distraction is key. Yeah. And for me, it was in the form of box sets. Like, I spent a whole day watching Gavin and Stacey.
Great choice.
From the start
strong
to finish.
Choice.
Yeah. Which was a good one. So that's a good one. But box sets. And actually, I've been asked this question quite a bit recently, actually, is how do I use my time, my distraction as well? And it's about being strict with it at the same time. So say, okay, I'm going to watch, I don't know, Harry Potter, for example.
Yeah.
There's 8 Harry Potter films, I think.
Quite a lot to get through.
Potentially 8 weeks there.
True, actually.
Which is a long period of time of treatment. So instead of watching it over 8 days, draw it out, watch over 8 weeks. Have every Thursday, watch Harry Potter.
Space it out, kind of on a set day per week.
Exactly, because I think we don't like saying this phrase in terms of you're trying to almost wish your life away at those points and get that bit out of the way. But the best way to do that is to sort of fill your time. And if you fill your time too quickly, it'll go. But yeah, honestly, distraction techniques, massive. Get a project. Big project was always good for me. I had a Lego project where I built a VW camper.
Oh, cool.
Didn't do it in one go, but I said, I'm going to take this into my transplant with me. We're going to do it over the transplant period. And it gave mum and dad that thing to sort of say, look, let's do a bit of the camper today.
Yeah.
And it can be 20 minutes, but that's 20 minutes of something you succeeded in doing that day. So it was very positive.
It sounds like, you know, little by little, kind of therapeutic as well. Kind of that Lego piece, you would have been able to see the gradual development of it as well, and taking pride in that and being like, no, even though I'm in this room right now and I'm in isolation, and I'm in hospital and it feels like a long time, as you say, it's kind of okay, well, what can a nice time look like? Is it taking even 20 minutes out and doing something like Lego, or is it watching a box set and kind of looking forward to it, versus, as you say, kind of cramming everything in and wishing that it was over?
And that's the thing as well, like, you've then got something positive to look out afterwards. So getting through a transplant is incredibly positive. People need to remind themselves this. Getting through a stem cell transplant is a very hard thing to do, and it's very positive when you get through that.
Yeah.
But it's not always looked at in that fashion, because it's a medical thing. So without, obviously, I don't have a medical degree, but people around me that have got them, without them telling me that, I wouldn't have understood that. So you having something like a camper van, which is hard to build, or a project, getting through that, you've then got a visual aid of, I achieved that in this time. Not just my transplant, I achieved that as well, which is a positive thing to look at.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of figuring out how do you want to spend your time? And obviously it is a long time, and it's weeks, really. So that's important as well. And kind of being nice to yourself and seeing that as a way of being like gentle with your experience. Well, I'm really into Lego, so I'm going to do that. So finally then, where can we find out more about what you're up to now and the work that you're doing?
Yeah, so obviously my name that's kind of come from everything is The L Card. So the best way to find me on any of the social media platforms is to basically search The L Card. And that comes
Is L for leukemia?
Yeah, L's for leukemia. So basically anybody's been diagnosed with cancer will know we get given a cancer card. Metaphorically, you get given a cancer card in terms of like, you can play this whenever you want because, you know, you've had this illness. So,
right.
And I got very good at milking that when I was out of treatment with mum, particularly. She's like, oh, mum, get me a cup of tea. She's like, no. I'm like, oh, come on, please, I'm ill. And I played it over and over again. And to the point where mum was like, look, Ryan, stop playing the L card. Like, I know what you're doing.
Oh, did she use that phrase?
So
really?
So that's where it's come from, yeah. So
interesting.
When I was sort of trying to choose a name for the book, that just came to my head straight away. The L card's got to be... That's a secret playing there. The name of the book's been called The L Card. But that's what it's come from. And then my sort of social media, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok now as well, which is incredibly difficult. But I'm getting to grips with it.
TikTok.
It is quite a skill. It's quite hard. But getting to grips with it is quite fun when you sort of start experimenting different things as well. So The L Card is what to search for.
That is sort of the key message that you've been saying all along about, like, just talk about it. Like, let's just bring this. This is your reality. Let's normalize reaching out. Let's normalize admitting to yourself if you're having a tough day and get that support and also use what's around you. So, yeah, that sounds amazing. And very exciting about your book. That sounds exceptional, and you've been through a lot, and it's inspiring. You know, 6 years later, here we are, and you can recall it, and you can also navigate what it's like now to kind of reflect on that and live beyond the experience. And I'm sure other patients will really find this so helpful. So thank you for being on the podcast.
No, thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Great. Thank you for listening. For more information on stem cell transplants and recovery, as well as free resources that you can download and order, visit our website, anthonynolan.org. We also have a fantastic supportive platform that is our Patients and Families Forum, where you can connect with other patients and family members. To access our online community, please visit anthonynolan.org/forum. We also have our Patients and Families Facebook page, where you can access our latest posts, information, events, and much more. To hear more about this and our other supports, please visit anthonynolan.org/patients. You can also email us at patientinfo@anthonynolan.org or call us on 0303 303 0303. Thank you.